following commentary does not necessarily reflect the views of the staff and management of WBCA or the Boston Neighborhood Network. If you would like to express another opinion, you can address your comments to Boston Neighborhood Network, 3025 Washington Street, Boston, Massachusetts, 02119. To arrange a time for your own commentary, you can call WBCA at 617-708-3215 or email radio@bnnmedia.org.
I have a problem every year around MLK Day because Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., for some reason, has been treated as America's civil rights mascot. On this day, you'll have folks who would have never in their life marched with, agreed with, voted with anything he believed in. One of the biggest in the United States Congress. He had the audacity to send out a Dr. King quote.
The march has begun. Every day we rise like the sun. We fight till the battle.
March and resist, pump your fist, wave your hands in the air just like this. We're here live here in the studio on Another Level. I'm your host and the producer of On Another Level. We're now Comcast Channel 6, but we get bounced around all over the place. BNNmedia.org is where you can see us. We may be taking phone calls later on. I'm not sure because my guest has been here before and we're just diving deeper into the whole issue of the Freedmen's Bureau. If you don't know, you're about to know. The effort in legislation in Massachusetts, because there may be money, more money, and more other things involved around reparations. We'll be discussing that with my guest, Queen Antonia Edwards. She is the CEO. She's the head queen of, CEO, co-founder of Solidarity and Community Engagement Group, and the president, co-founder?
I'm a board member.
Board member of the Freedmen's Bureau. We're going to talk about the office, the initiative to have an office here in Boston, and all of that. And you know how you have to do. You have to get a pen and a pencil and a paper, but you got to get the information. Stay here. Don't leave us. We're on Another Level.
On January 1st, 1863, President Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation, an executive order that proclaimed the freedom of enslaved African Americans in states that had seceded from the Union. Over 2 years later, the Civil War was ended, and by December of 1865, the 13th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was ratified, abolishing slavery in the United States. Each of these steps helped nearly 4 million former slaves gain their freedom. These African Americans faced a long, difficult road to independence. And for many, it was a challenge even to find shelter and work. One of the first steps President Lincoln took to help them was urging Congress to establish the Bureau of Refugees, Freedmen, and Abandoned Lands, more commonly known as the Freedmen's Bureau, in March of 1865. The Bureau helped former slaves secure jobs by drawing up labor contracts and providing temporary housing, food, and medical care. It was also tasked with reuniting families that were separated during the Civil War. The Freedmen's Bureau legalized marriages and kept detailed records that are housed in the National Archives to this day. But perhaps its greatest achievement was in education. The Freedmen's Bureau established thousands of freedmen's schools in the South, increasing black literacy to above 30%. It also built several colleges that are known today as historically black colleges and universities, like Fisk University in Tennessee and Howard University in Washington, D.C., granting more than 1,000 college degrees to African Americans by 1872. The Freedmen's Bureau's accomplishments did not come easy. Its efforts were not supported by the majority of white Southerners, and many white Northerners were ambivalent toward its goals. After President Lincoln was assassinated, Vice President Johnson took his place. As a Southerner, Johnson had little sympathy for the former slaves. He quickly cut funding to the already unpopular program. At the same time, white people that worked for the Freedmen's Bureau often had to deal with ridicule. Even so, many Bureau workers stayed in the South, helping the Reconstruction effort by getting involved in politics, renting homes, and rebuilding their own lives and the economy as well. While the lack of funding contributed to the disbandment of the Freedmen's Bureau in 1872, its influence is noteworthy. For many African Americans, the services of the Freedmen's Bureau were a vital source of support as they created new lives and sought to claim their new freedoms.
I want to thank NBC for allowing us to air that. And I have to take a break because I feel like I've been traumatized. Let me welcome my guest first, Queen Antonia. Thank you for coming back.
Thank you for having me.
I can't get enough of the information because, frankly, when I look at how wide the wealth gap is, and it's actually wider today mm-hmm. than it was in 1965, when we're actually starting to make some inroads, right, in terms of legislation,
yes,
civil rights, mm-hmm. voters' rights, women's rights, against the Vietnam War, and trying to try, and there were all these movements around people of color, mm-hmm. right? And now we're sliding back. And I love the fact that this particular piece talked about the historic beginnings of this.
Yes.
And the HBCUs. And in a short period of time, when it was illegal to read or write.
Exactly.
We started establishing institutions and colleges mm-hmm. that have to date graduated more doctors, lawyers, scientists, teachers than all the Ivy League colleges combined.
Exactly.
Whose standards are supposed to be so elite. And that's still happening today. As a matter of fact, with the Supreme Court ruling and the legislation that's happened, mm-hmm. the admissions of black students of color, has been declining.
Right.
And nobody even cares now. So the initiative that you're talking about, you just had a forum yesterday, and you've had these informational forums. We don't have the brothers here this time, but we have you, because you know, Queens elevate queens, and we don't,
okay, we
love them, and we include them, but we don't always need them. So in the conversation, we always need you, bruh, but not in the conversation all the time. And so, you know, and then the other thing, too, is that, you know, black women, we're the most educated class in this country, but we're also the lowest paid.
That's true.
And then we don't have the benefit of the familial structure. Like Latinas, are low paid too, but they actually usually have their structure, their family structure.
Family structure is different.
Intact.
Right.
The community structure is different. Like we're out there being superheroes fighting for everybody else
right.
and still getting pushed down in the middle of the pack or to the bottom of the totem pole in the bottom of the pack. So the legislative initiatives that you have, and if you guys can bring that up a minute, the legislation, let's talk about mm-hmm. the legislation because, you know, the Supreme Court has not always been black people's friends. Mm-hmm. Especially now in this current climate. And for those of you who have not registered to vote, it is a voting year and it's a presidential election. Hello. So if you're not registered, get registered. If you're registered, find out what the issues are and then you vote. Then you vote. You vote. Black people died for the right to register mm-hmm. and vote. And if you don't do that now, I hope that an ancestor comes to visit you and tells you.
Oh my gosh.
I know that would be freaky, huh?
That would be real freaky.
I don't think that, as a Christian, I don't really think that it'd be ancestor. But if it scares you into voting, hey. So if you guys can bring that up, I don't know if you see it while we're talking about it. So here it is. Bill H392-1, an act to cure us of the liabilities. Oh, it's the U.S. An act to cure us of the liabilities that ultimately restricted equity. So the us is black people?
It's American freedmen.
Oh, but it says us on there. Okay, mm-hmm. American Freedmen. Mm-hmm. And so where is this legislation now? Because I think when I read the cover page, and so people can go on this, it's Commonwealth of Massachusetts page. It has been tabled, I guess, until September. There's another forum or something that's supposed to be happening.
So let me go back again. My name's Antonia Edwards. I am the co-founder of Solidarity Community Engagement Group. I'm also a certified board member of United Sons and Daughters. And so United Sons and Daughters is a national American Freedmen Advocacy Group and educational resource. We, as a team, put the proposal together, and we've been working very closely with State Rep Brandy Fluker Oakley, presented the proposal to her, and she submitted it last year, I do believe around April.
Okay.
So the hearing on this bill was December 5th.
Okay.
And since then, we've been waiting for a decision. We found out sometime in March that it was extended to April 30th.
Okay.
And then more recently, last week, when April 30th came, they extended it into June 30th.
That's the extension.
Right. And so that's a good thing for us because that means that they're listening. We've been working very closely with the Judiciary Committee, feeding them information as requested, as to giving them more contextual evidence and precedents for American freedmen. And that's what we want. Our ultimate goal is to get an Office of Freedmen Affairs.
And that would be in Massachusetts?
That would be in Massachusetts. Also, we're advocating for it in Boston as well, too. And the reason why we're doing this is because we have all these different plans, whether it be $15 billion or whether it be we want reparations for this or that, whatever. The only way we think that it can be consistently and concisely accounted for is to go back with the Office of Freedmen Affairs. And so we're asking to establish that like expeditiously now so we can get people registered and also so it can be set up to basically cater or serve to those who are American freedmen and get them established and registered. Almost like tribal registration. So, for instance, once you register, you get your genealogist to verify
your... So you register with who? You register
with the American, with the Office of Freedmen Affairs. That's why we're asking for it now. Once you get registered, because this is a standalone from reparations. And so once you get registered, then you've applied, you get your paperwork back saying that you are a American freedman based on genealogy, and then you get your card. A certificate saying that you are actually American freedman based on the lineage and documentation that was provided. And then you assign a case manager. And so we're also hoping to have this Office of Freedmen Affairs established so that when the Task Force for Boston comes down with their recommendation, we can assist them.
You're at the table.
We're already at the table. There needs to be accountability. There needs to be some kind of agency that can handle the recommendations that are put in place and not necessarily one grassroots organization, one person. There needs to be some kind of checks and balances, and that's what we're asking for.
I like it.
I love it.
I like it.
Well, I love
it. And I love it because it's organized.
It's very organized.
Because it's focused. Mm-hmm. Because it is actually using a system that's already in place. You're not reinventing a mechanism.
Exactly.
And then so that piece that we just saw, the historical piece we just saw, mm-hmm. Is this revitalizing the Freedmen's Bureau?
So I just want to make something clear. So when it comes to like local reparations, the American freedmen didn't initiate them. They were initiated by other people. And so we just want to make sure that the verbiage and legislation.
No, but I mean the 1865 Freedmen's Bureau.
Right, I don't want to,
they said that was was dissolved, right?
Right. It was deactivated because it was sabotaged, basically.
Okay,
so
okay.
As you heard, Andrews sabotaged it and got rid of
President,
it, whatever.
Yeah.
President Andrews. So Johnson. So what we're basically saying is it's bottom top. And so it shouldn't be that way. So we're hoping that because all these local reparation initiatives are being created, that we can have the Office of Freedmen Affairs and the local municipalities, and then to springboard to the federal to open back up the Federal Bureau of for American Freedmen.
So I could possibly get my 40 acres and a mule.
Because technically people may not understand that, you know, the debt for reparations is a federal debt. The federal government owes this debt, but I know that some people are asking for acts of atonement and truth and reconciliation on a state level, but there's no way
Pay any bills with that.
A city or state would be able to pay the debt for reparations. And so if there is any monetary gain or financial compensation for reparations, we would like to see that handled through the Office of Freedmen Affairs.
I know California has made a lot of inroads recently in terms of resolving that. And so the dollar figure that they came up with is actually twice the budget of the whole state of California.
And that's why it's very, to me, kind of like disillusional to expect a city or a state to pay for reparations when it's a federal debt. So Dr. Darity's book, From Here to Equality, clearly outlines the blueprint for reparations, $16 trillion and above. And that's not with compound interest. So no city or state could possibly pay for that. So I think a lot of people are putting the cart before the horse. And so if they're going to do these initiatives across the nation, like the Noxon and Cobras and whoever's initiating these reparation, you know, initiatives, we just want to make sure that the verbiage is correct. We find that a lot of people are saying reparations, give us $15 billion cash, but they're not talking about our ancestors. They're not talking about the 4 million formerly emancipated slaves. They're not talking about us as descendants. They're just saying anybody black should get reparations, and that's just a false narrative.
Au contraire. So let's get it play. See, when y'all come up to me in the street, if I didn't call for you, don't come for me. I mean, you can say hi, but let's be clear. All skin folk ain't kinfolk. And And there's a movement that's happening. It's been happening for a long time.
Yes.
I'll just take the education piece. For right now, Judge Garrity mandated that 25% of the teachers in Boston Public Schools are supposed to be Black and African American.
Yes.
That is not what's there.
No.
They have never reached that percentage, although BPS, Boston Public Schools, for those that you're slow and don't know, always plays with these numbers, making it look like they've attained it and surpassed it.
Right.
On the reparations level, there are people and there are offices that are being created now of people who think that they're entitled to reparations. But in this discussion in the United States, the only people who haven't got reparations are descendants of slaves, formerly enslaved Africans
American
in this country.
Freedmen.
American freedmen.
Right, exactly.
And so that's why it's so important to have that language in there and designate
exactly
where the money's. It's like if I'm in an accident and the check's supposed to come to me, and then you go, wait a minute, I'm her.
Right. It's deeper than that.
And it's even deeper than that. I'm just simplifying
it. It's deeper than that.
But
I think that a lot of people think that because of the melanin of their skin and their potential to be discriminated against or haven't been discriminated against, they feel as though that's slave reparations.
Well, they have been discriminated against, but not necessarily on a legacy and a level from being formerly enslaved, because they're, you know, because if you are Black and you have melanin,
right,
because of the way the system is set up,
the chances are you will be discriminated against. However,
right,
that's a judicial matter. It's not a slave reparations reparatory matter. So for instance, I think that people are using the legacy of slavery to say
we
all Black people should get reparations, and that's not necessarily the case.
Well, but there's not even just Black people there. There's Latinos, there's Asian Americans, there's...
But they now think that they're of color, or they think that they are... No, literally. This is what we're faced with. For instance, like you have Afro-Latinas, you have Cape Verdeans now that are saying that they're Black, and anybody of color. And that's that word person
of
color.
And going after that money.
Right. The term person of color is now a very dangerous, I'm saying, term. Because
but that's
who
also
is,
recent, too, the Black indigenous people of color. That's like
right,
recent.
Exactly. But that has nothing to do with slave reparations. Slave reparations and for their descendants are for those who were enslaved and their descendants, the legacy of slavery. So that means that we're talking about the legacy of slavery and Massachusetts' complicity in slavery. So, for instance, a lot of people don't even know the history that Massachusetts is the first state to legalize slavery.
Right.
So we're talking about that. We're talking about the fact that prior to 1965, when there was 1% Black immigrants in the country, that we had a legacy of slavery. We had slavery, we had the emancipation, we had Reconstruction, where we were promised things like 40 acres and a mule, and then that was reneged on. Those, that monies and the Freedmen's
Bank.
Racial
terrorism that came out of that?
Not even that. We had the Freedmen's Bank, where the black previous emancipated slaves put money in bank and soldiers, and the money was pilfered, and it was given to white slave owners.
The Homestead Act. Yep.
That's where our 40 acres and a mule went to. Then we had Jim Crow. We had black codes.
Redlining.
So all that transpired
prior. Mass incarceration.
We always had convict leasing and mass incarceration prior
to. Well, but it was legal with the black codes.
Exactly. So we're talking about that legacy, the legacy and prior to the 1900s. And that's what we're talking about. My family stems from that. I know that to be true because I've traced my lineage. And plus, I've seen it myself because slavery wasn't that long ago. I mean, if you really think about it, I mean, I'm like three generations removed.
Well, but we're also the generation where we got the right to vote.
Exactly.
And we fought for the right to vote.
Right, and it's only been 150 years since all that transpired. And if you really look at it, civil rights was only like 50-something years ago.
Right.
So
1968.
Exactly. So I just want to make sure people are clear that, you know, when you're talking about racial injustices, that doesn't compute to reparations. People who have injustices based on, you know, the color of their skin or, you know, racial discrimination.
That's part of the legacy of slavery.
That's one of the badges and incidents of slavery, but that's also a judicial matter. It's not a reparations matter for slavery. And I think that when every time I hear slave reparations, I'm definitely going to jump in and make sure that my ancestors are being recognized for that. So you can't talk about reparations without speaking about the ancestors. And those are the formerly emancipated enslaved in America, which are American freedmen, according to congressional documents. It's legitimate, it's legal, and that's what we fight for.
So how close, what do you need people to do? Do you need I mean, this is, you have until September to actually to organize around this effort.
No, actually, we've come a long way. We've done a lot of work. The mm-hmm. team that I work with at United Sons and Daughters and my co-founder, Jonathan Bryan, and I, we've done a lot of work around people. We've always educated people. We've always done events, community engagement. And we just feel like we can only bring so many people. The stuff has to be done. So again, like
but
I said.
There's a petition though, isn't there?
The petition is for the Office of Freedmen Affairs in Boston and also for the state level. That's ongoing. Again, like I said, the state bill, the H3921 with Brandy Fluker-Oakley, is extended until June 30th. You can call her office and basically tell her that you're in support of it. Also, the Judiciary Committee, their office has the bill right now, and they're making decisions. You can call them as well, too.
Why aren't we hearing more about this?
I think that the reason why you're not hearing more about this is because it's an all Black Lives Matter situation, and it could be we're being overshadowed by it. And I think that people are thinking it's very divisive. And I'm here to say I'm the least divisive person. We do know that there is a potential for people to have a path to seek repair for discrimination. They can take our harm reports from like the Boston Task Force after they finish their research consulting.
But that's 2 years.
Okay, but it's been 400 for us.
Well, I mean, no, I'm just saying that the timeline for that studying, because I'm going to the meetings, you're talking about, well, in 2 years, we're going to have this stuff.
And that's good, because I would prefer for them to take the 2 years to study the history of Massachusetts and what they did to be complicit in slavery. So we have documentation on that. Mm. So then we can then fairly quantify what that is. How can you come up with a number like $15 billion? And you don't even know how do you quantify each harm? Like right now in my mind, based on California, we have 12 areas of harm. Okay, so what does that quantify to? It can't just be a flat rate of $15 billion or we don't know what it is, but just give us a down payment. So what I'm suggesting is once the research consultants complete their research and we come to the table, those who feel like they've been racially unjusted, they can take those reports, harm reports, and say, based on the fact of, had it not been for slavery, we wouldn't have been treated this way, and fight their battle. Right now, we're talking about slave reparations, those who were enslaved and their descendants and the legacy of slavery and the intergenerational trauma that has been sufficed before it. And I want to just say this, too. I'm looking at, like, the Native Americans. The Native Americans, they had their treaties. They have their Bureau of Indian Affairs. We had our Freedmen's Bureau before them. How come ours dissipated, but theirs is still standing? And so technically, we should be at the same pace that they are. We should have our Freedmen's Bureau. We should be, you know, basically managed by the Division of Interior, Department of Interior, by the United States government. We should have no taxation. We should have free medical, free education, just like they do. And it should have been consistent along the line. We were brought here. We were kidnapped and brought here. We didn't ask to be here. We didn't migrate here. We were basically kidnapped and forced to do free labor for 250 years. And it's been a 400-plus cycle of discrimination, racism based
depression.
On who we are. And there's no other group that has faced that. And
none.
So I'm just going to be honest.
In this country.
As we see other people, you know, migrate to America, like the current, you know, illegal immigrants, they're illegal and they're getting more benefits and they're getting more understanding and compassion and support than we've ever received. And they're also getting more money. I mean, look, $79,000 on cards, and they're getting food stamps, they're getting this
$30,000 for housing vouchers.
Housing vouchers. We just had the Haitian people who fled Haiti who just had housing put in JP. I mean, I'm not trying to be funny and I'm not trying to be divisive, but anytime we speak about reparations or what's been done to us, we've been made a mockery of. You know, you're just asking for handouts. You're just, you know, get over it, whatever, so for the storm. But then we have real life situations where people flee to America and they're always embraced. There's always an understanding. There's always a pull for funds and, you know,
clothing,
education, and let's make considerations for
citizenship.
These groups of people and citizenship.
Fast track the citizenship.
Exactly.
And we've been treated like second class citizens and
no,
we were born
not
here.
Even second, third and fourth class
citizens.
Well,
that's true.
You know, so I just feel like, you know, we're not whining. We just want to make sure that at this point, if you can do all this for other people, whether it be in Ukraine, Afghanistan, or the illegal aliens, then we can really talk about, you know, reparations. It's always been there's no money. Where is this money coming from? And most taxpayer people think, you know, people for the opposition were like, I don't want to pay that. It shouldn't come out of my pocket. I shouldn't be spending my tax dollars. Okay, but it's not directly your tax dollars. It's a debt owed by the federal government. They can pull money out of their pockets.
Well, it's not just the federal government. It's the banks. It's the medical industry.
It's the Federal
Reserve.
It's the
insurance company. I mean, but I'm just saying people that have profited, industries and institutions that have profited.
Right.
There's historical information and data where universities were built from the cell.
Well, just like Harvard, they just did the legacy of slavery where they have been, to their
literally
fault.
Sold slaves.
Exactly. And we have, churches. So I think that what it is in the state of Massachusetts and Boston, there was not one person in Boston at that time that was white that didn't benefit from slavery. That's how it was. Everybody benefited from it. So it was just a known thing. So we are just working on Massachusetts right now because this is where we live. And so we just want to make sure that the records are straight. And I would really prefer for it to be researched in depth. And I have a good feeling that the research consultants for Harvard, Northeastern and also Tufts will get that done. And so I have a good feeling that that'll be done. And once that's done, then people can see the story. And it's not just about, we just want reparations, give us to us now, and let's not talk about the facts. The facts are there was some real deep-rooted, horrendous stuff that was done to us, and we're no different than
over a period of time.
Right.
Repeatedly.
But it's still going on.
It wasn't just slavery. Right. It wasn't just slavery and then it ended.
No.
No, it's still going on.
It's still going on. And so, I think that I have a hard time because I grew up with everybody. I went to school in Needham. My friends are from every walk of life. And I have a hard time understanding how we had to learn everybody else's heritage and everybody else's plight. But then when it came to the plight of those who descend from slavery in the U.S., there was no compassion, there was nothing. And so we are no different than those who descend from those from the Jewish Holocaust. It didn't happen here, it happened in Germany.
Because that was 6 years, and ours was 250.
But what I'm saying is the horrific stuff that was done. It was horrific.
But it still was different. Because, and the reason why I say it was different, and Whoopi Goldberg got in trouble with this, and they actually suspended her. And she said the Holocaust wasn't about race, and then they made her retract that statement. Well, it was about race, because at that time, the Jewish people were considered a separate race, right? But then when the United States needed more white people, then all of a sudden the Italians weren't Italian, they were white. The Jews weren't Jews, they were white. Mm-hmm. The Irish weren't Irish, because there were signs up, no Irish need to apply.
I remember all that. Yeah, and I remember all the reading.
But then
all
they
that.
Were white, right? Because, and so... We can go deeper, but I feel like we need a
but
break.
But we were considered subhuman.
Hold it. So were they were at one point, especially the Jews. And when you look at the newspapers and the coverage during the the Nazi oppression and everything, they were cartoons just like they had of us.
Exactly.
So I want to take a break for a minute because there's a piece that I want people to see. It puts a lot more historical context. Just because we take a break, that just means we're having a break in the conversation, but not in the information.
Right.
You've just tuned in. We're on another level. The reason why I named the show On Another Level is because I wanted to bring whatever we're talking about, whether it's community information or events or happenings or initiatives or movements, deeper than what you would get in regular media, social media, or whatever. Most people are getting their information not from newspapers. They're getting it from watching some kind of social media. We are in the media. We're BNN Media. Here you can become a producer as well if you have a point of view or a constituency or a population that you want to talk about. We're going to give you information. Remember that pen and paper and, or however you take notes, get it out now. Stay with us and we'll be right back.
You drink too much coffee. You eat out too much. You shouldn't buy that fancy phone. You don't know how to budget. That's why you don't have any money. Maybe you've heard these reasons for why you're struggling to get by. People of color hear them all the time. They are lies. Listen up. To understand this struggle in America, we have to look at the role of race in our economy. For people of color in the U.S., the root of our financial insecurity stems from institutional racism and white supremacy that has existed since the founding of this country. Let's start with home ownership. Buying a house is supposed to be the way middle-class Americans build wealth. Of course, these days, many Americans are struggling to make this dream come true, and for people of color, it used to be practically impossible. And that was by design. By design. Starting in the 1930s, Black people in this country were systematically denied the opportunity to purchase homes because of a racist scheme called redlining. Majority Black and brown neighborhoods were literally colored in red and shut out of home loans. The past plagues us today. 60% of those redlined communities remain low-income minority neighborhoods. You've heard of subprime mortgages, right? Those products that wrecked the economy in 2008 and destroyed Black and Latino wealth? Well, they were generated during the redlining era. Housing is just one bit of institutional racism that hinders the ability of people of color to build wealth. That's to say nothing of slavery and Jim Crow laws, which led us to mass incarceration. But we'll get to that in a minute. Let me catch you up. So, acknowledging that the past was rigged, we can better understand our present. And in the present, the racial wealth gap is enormous. And when I say wealth, we're not talking about being rich. Wealth is what you own, your house, car, savings, or business, minus what you owe. Credit card debt, student loan debt, fines, etc. Getting things you can own, like a house or something that grows in value over time, like education, is often a result of what your parents are able to help you with. And in the case of many people of color, our parents aren't able to contribute much financially, if at all. Over generations, Black and brown families become shut out from acquiring the cornerstones of wealth. And that's how we get situations like this today. Listen to this. For every $100 in white family wealth, Black families hold just $5.04. Another one. Even when Black and Latinx households earn a solidly middle-class income, they accrue just a fraction of the wealth of white households. Black and Latinx families headed by a college graduate have less wealth than families headed by white high school dropouts. And this one is unreal. By the middle of this century, Black and Latinx median household wealth will nearly be zero. Hopefully, you're starting to understand how shaming people, especially people of color, for a cup of coffee or a nice dinner out is ludicrous. It's time for a reckoning. But that is not what is happening. Policymakers and wealthy corporations are doubling down on inequality. Look no further than the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. According to one study, on average, white households received an estimated $2,020 in cuts, while Latinx households received just $970, and Black households received $840. Shameful. It's shameful, for example, that while worker productivity is up, wages are not rising for Black and Latinx workers. And remember when I mentioned mass incarceration? It is yet another profit-driven, predatory system that strips savings and earnings from people of color. We make up 67% of the prison population, despite only being 37% of the U.S. population. Our families, especially women, spend billions of dollars in unfair fines and fees that cause financial instability and, too often, multi-generational poverty. Mass incarceration and detention determines both economic and political outcomes for too many families of color. Policing the minute decisions about how people of color spend their disposable income is a distraction. It's a distraction from the systems of injustice we have collectively and historically created and continue to perpetuate. You have the power to bring truth to light. You know the real story. So write it. Tell someone. Tell us. We know that in order to have survived in a country we've been told is not ours, people of color have been and continue to be resilient, entrepreneurial, and deserving. Tell us your story of resilience. Tell your policymakers. Press candidates to tell you what they are doing to upend racial wealth inequality. And make it easier for you to pay that next bill, to afford healthcare and a home, to send your kids to college, to save for retirement. Tell them you deserve no less than a robust plan that rewrites our future stories.
Briefly, how did it feel to do a video with us?
It was great. This is such an important topic that...
Interested in becoming a radio DJ? Boston Neighborhood Network's 102.9 FM is offering a course of radio production that can get you started. For more information, please head over to bnnmedia.org/services/workshops.
We're back here on another level. Thursday, March 16th is 5:30, Black Indigenous People of Color. If you can scan that QR code, then you can find out more information about that. We'll talk about that later on in the program, and we'll come back. You can hear me, but you can't see me. And we're back here on Another Level. I'm your host and producer, Sharon Hinton. Sunday, May 6th, reparations for the American freedmen. There was an online reparations town hall, and it was held by the United Sons and Daughters of Freedmen and Be the Power. They presented it. They discussed with the general public the possibility of reparations. New freedmen status, not race, will determine the program, if the program can survive a legal challenge, how it will be paid for, how to become politically active. And the forum included Naheem Way, president, Josh Gray, treasurer and vice president, Ali Bey, director of history and research, and Ibrahim Tanner, director of communication. Reparations for American Freedmen, that was yesterday. And I think you can go to the website, and it's probably up there, and you can get more information about what's going on and upcoming, the legislation and the different things we talked about before the break. Welcome back, Anthony Edwards.
Thank you.
and I have in my hand this introductory lesson for beginners, reparations for freedmen families, and the overview and purpose. It's a little, you know, you can't really see it, but to familiarize those who are interested in reparations with the basic understanding of why it's important to take a race-neutral approach to reparations using terminology such as freedmen, American freedmen, and the freedmen class, to bring awareness to emerging threats to the upward mobility of American freedmen families and why reparations are a necessity, and I dare say necessity now.
Yes, there is.
Way past due.
Yes. There's a pure erasure of our heritage, and it really disheartens me that every other culture, race, or people has a heritage, whether it be their dialect, whether it be their foods, whether it be their customs, values, and traditions. And so, it's sadly to say, mine's is slavery. I'm so sorry to say that, but that's what it is. But it seems as though with every name change, and we're the only race of people this name's been changed several times. First, we were Black Negro, then it was colored mulatto, then it was Afro-American, African-American, now it's Black, and now it's BIPOC, and it's people of color. And it's purposely done to mesh anybody who's melanated together and to basically erase our heritage. And so it is very important that we stand on the American freedmen class. And again, it should be a protected class, just like the Native Americans, distinct and protected. And it is with the 13th Amendment. However, it has never been expounded upon.
And there was already a precedent, and it was already in motion.
Already a precedent, already existed. We had the American Freedmen Act of 1865. We had the American Freedmen Bureau, which created all the different HBCUs and the bureau as well too. And then we had the banks. So American Freedmen is not a new term. It's just that after a certain period, after the dismantled stuff, we just never pursued it. And I really wish that during the Civil Rights Movement, we pursued the American Freedmen heritage versus Black at that point. But I think at that point, Martin Luther King was thinking that we need to be integrated more so than, you know, speak of American freedmen. Had he done that, and then not necessarily drop the baton once he was assassinated, I think that we would be further now than we are.
Well, also, I don't think a lot of people realize that the founding members, a large majority of the founding members of NAACP were Jewish.
Right,
and
they were.
And they were, you know.
A lot of people don't know that.
I remember seeing interviews with some of the founding members, and they were asked, why did you take, you took a different approach with your people than you did ours.
Exactly.
You point us towards education as the equalizer, but you guys went for economic empowerment and power bases.
Exactly.
And I think, and I don't remember who it was, so don't quote me, that who it was that said that we thought that that was the most viable at that time.
At that time.
That was the most viable route to take. But, and I remember, you know, reading about, talking about, hearing about, seeing, because Black and white TV, we would see down south people getting hosed and bitten by dogs and disappearing and everything. And then, you know, it was a lot of them with children, young people.
Exactly.
But people, there was also the backlash of people lost their jobs, they lost their homes. The majority of people who were lynched were business people. They were entrepreneurs, and they were standing up for their rights, and they wanted to get paid.
Or they were landowners.
Landowners.
And they wanted to take their lands away, and that's how you got the burning crosses in front of the houses or whatever, so forth and so
terrorism.
On. And that's the racial terror that we're talking about that forced our parents to migrate to the South during the Great Migration.
And you also talk about, right, and you also talk about the migration that went to the North, the West, and the Boston, the East.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so my parents, grandparents, North Carolina, South Carolina, Mississippi, Alabama, mm-hmm. came up through that way to
right.
Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Midwest, you have, that's why you see these pockets. Mm-hmm. But then there's also a reverse thing that's happening now because mm-hmm. people came up and now they're saying, well, this is not really the promised land because mm-hmm. we still are, you know, I always call, you know, there was Mississippi and there's Massissippi.
Massissippi. Mm-hmm.
And Massissippi, they were just, actually, when I think about it, they weren't that settled. They just didn't have the signs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they just wouldn't unlock the door to let you in.
Right.
And I remember that.
I remember that, too.
You know, mm-hmm. having to fight your way back across Columbia Road, certain
right.
parts, even in Dorchester.
South Boston, Columbia Road,
yeah.
all that area. I'm saying, then we had the desegregation. I told you how my mom was a bus driver, and she was the first Black woman bus driver. They were throwing rocks and bottles at her because they didn't want Black students into South Boston.
Which was the worst school than where were their buses from?
Exactly. And how we've gone through gentrification now, and how it's really even hard for anybody who is Black to stay in the communities that they lived in because
but
of gentrification.
But African-Americans also, because we have this large wealth gap.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Black folks are worth
$8. $8.
Eight. You heard that? Eight. Not 80, not 800, not
$8.
$8. Eight.
Mm-hmm.
Single digit. And white families in Roxbury have a $247,000.
And then Black immigrants are like 13,000 in comparison to the $8 for American freedmen
cool,
potential.
Born here.
Right.
Here.
Exactly.
So you have that inequity that's still happening.
Mm-hmm.
You still have, in some people, even though it's illegal, you still have in some people's deeds to their homes not to sell it to a Black person.
They do have that still. I remember that, seeing that.
Mm-hmm. And I know when I went to buy my house in Hyde Park, and don't show up at my house because I have a really big dog.
Mm.
Don't come for me if I haven't called for you, even if you think you know where I live. But we had a hard time.
Yeah.
And they actually, the people that we got the house from, didn't want to sell the house to us. And they actually mm-hmm. broke the purchase and sale. They did some illegal stuff and we busted them
right.
out. They trying to keep us
right.
from having this house. And I remember my brothers going to school in Hyde Park where mm-hmm. they were throwing
rocks. I remember Hyde Park as well, too. You know what the most profound thing that I remember? My mom has worked her hard her whole life, and she's always acquired things. And I remember she was so proud to get her first fur coat, and she had credit cards. And Saks Fifth Avenue had a private party, a private shopping day for their VIP customers, and she was one of them. And her and my brother showed up, and they wouldn't let her in.
Ooh.
I remember that distinctly. I remember that she was so heartbroken. And that stuff happened when Black people couldn't shop at Lord & Taylor's and Saks Fifth Avenue. Yeah, we weren't allowed. And people don't remember that stuff, but I do.
I remember that.
I remember that. I remember that from, and it's like she worked hard.
I remember going downtown.
Yep, downtown, finding.
If you could get in, they would let you look at it, but you couldn't touch it.
You couldn't touch anything. Yep. Isn't that amazing?
And that's our lifetime.
Right. And I'm 58, so, and I remember all this stuff. I remember being discriminated against. I remember that. And seeing that look in my mom's face, because she felt like we've arrived, we're integrated. I work hard, so there's really no reason why I should be treated that way.
But
for slavery.
Well, racism, oppression.
Right, but for slavery, the badges. And
you know, I mean, it, right. And it's still happening.
It's still happening.
If you are a homeowner and you're Black, your house is devalued. It's not valued as much.
Exactly. Your insurance is higher.
Your insurance is higher.
Mm-hmm.
You're not, if you sell your property, it's not worth as much.
No, it's not.
And a lot of people finance their kids' education from based on the value of your house.
Exactly.
And so you don't get that opportunity to have the come up, even though you're working harder.
Mm-hmm.
And you could be just as qualified. Usually we have to be more qualified
right.
just to get in the door.
Exactly.
So even that false narrative about affirmative action, the assumption or the narrative that's always said is, well, you just got off of here with affirmative action. That's because we had to force you to open the door, but we still had to be super qualified to get in and stay in there.
Well, affirmative action was supposed to be for us. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Through civil rights. However,
civil rights.
It didn't benefit us. It benefited
no,
white women.
White women, more
and
than anybody.
And then it became disability, then it became LGBT, then it became other groups of people that benefit
Which
from it.
Which is what's happening in reparations.
Right, and so that's why they're dismantling it. It's like, it's not it shouldn't be about race or shouldn't be about...
Well, I mean, you can't whitewash it.
Right.
But you can't make that a standard because then it qualifies people who don't qualify.
Exactly. And that's what happened.
So we got another clip. Mm-hmm. I want to show this other clip. It's really short. It's within the segment because when we start talking, which is why I wasn't sure we're going to open up the phones, I want you to get this information so that you can bring this to your family. You can think about it. You can do some more research. This is not passive media and passive television. I'm a teacher, and so I'm giving you homework.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a really short clip. Pay attention, and let's roll it.
Realities of the road to normality in America. The simplest of tasks, such as finding shelter or gaining employment, were encumbered for these new citizens. Because of this, in 1865, after a strong recommendation from President Lincoln, Congress passed an act to establish the Bureau of Refugees, Freedmen, and Abandoned Lands, commonly referred to as the Freedmen's Bureau. The Federal Commission provided food, housing, medical care, and other necessities primarily to African Americans. It was a vital source of support for Black people looking to begin the journey of living freely. Today, Ancestry.com released the world's largest digital collection of searchable Freedmen's Bureau records. The more than 3 million documents will hopefully help descendants of enslaved people trace their family lineage. The records include everything from marriage licenses to bank records and business contracts. For many Black people, these records were the first time they were listed by name on official documents. The Freedmen's Bureau is probably most famous for confronting perhaps the greatest challenge to post-Civil War America, the literacy of Black people. The organization established thousands of schools throughout the South. It also helped build institutions known today as historically Black colleges and universities like Fisk and Howard. The efforts of the Bureau were not strongly supported by whites in the South, and whites in the North were indifferent. After Lincoln's assassination, Vice President Andrew Johnson took his place and, as a Southerner, was unsympathetic to the goals of the Bureau. He quickly cut funding to the program, and the Bureau was subsequently disbanded in 1872. While it was short-lived, the Bureau was indeed a seminal part of American history, and the records left behind are available for everyone on the Ancestry website. So today, we remember the Freedmen's Bureau, an institution that helped fill a canvas that was left blank by many historians and salvaged the experience of newly freed Black Americans as they took their first steps into freedom. And that is for the culture. Thank you for watching Prime, and good night.
And so I want to thank the GRIO Network. You know, I remember Byron Allen, and he had all these different little shows that would show up at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning. Homeboy is a millionaire, owning many networks, including the Weather Channel. Mm-hmm. And he, along with Tyler Perry, and I think P. Diddy, they tried to collaborate and buy one of Viacom's properties that included BET. And then all of a sudden, it wasn't for sale. We finally get the money, and I remember Bill Cosby. And he tried to buy NBC, and his show, The Cosby Show, was the top show on NBC, and he had the money, and then all of a sudden it wasn't for sale. So even when we are empowered and organized and knowledgeable about the game, play the game, because we, and I say we, I'm talking about Black people, have to play the game, learn the game, play the rules, and play by the rules, or we get locked up or killed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not making this up. Do your history. Then they change the game.
They do.
So one who is changing the game to be our games, Antonia Edwards, Queen Antonia, where do we go now? What do we do now?
So I think that what we do is we pay attention closely to legislation, especially the Supreme Court ruling. That's a big piece that anything that's a race initiative is non-constitutional. And also stated that American Freedmen is a race neutral term. And so I think that people need to understand that we can't really do anything race-based at this point. And if you look at the Bloom, Edward Bloom from Texas, his organization is squashing anything race-based. They've gone to Congress, they squash stuff, DEI, all that stuff is being dismantled.
Affirmative action, educational initiatives. Yeah.
Educational initiatives, whatever. So we have to pay attention to what's going on around us. And so we stand firm in saying that we've always said that our pathway to reparations for our lineage and for our heritage is American freedom.
You and I came up at a time when people were a lot more collaborative.
Yes, they were.
And the blueprint that the Black Panthers, Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, and there were other organizations were not necessarily unified, but at least in the movement.
In the movement.
People had different strategies and different roads, but it was still about liberation for people of color because, you know, the brown berets, you had the black berets with the Black Panthers and everything, but you had the Latino movement, you had the Asian American movement, the Native American movement were all based on the blueprint from what we set. And then we set that. They used what we set up, same thing, affirmative action. We set that, fought for that. And then other people, other classes of people, other groups of people, other constituencies benefit. And we get left behind.
Left behind every time.
Why?
I think that we have this issue where we're so dead set on including everybody. We always look out for everybody else except for ourselves, and then we fight each other like crabs in the bottom of the barrel. I'm going to be honest with you. And then those who do have put in positions to make a difference, it's always about the ism complex, I, self, and me. And my father told me that long time ago, people will never cease to disappoint you. They have the ism complex, I, self, and me. So you have a lot of people across the country and even here in Massachusetts and Boston who have the potential to have leadership skills because our people are in dire need to have a leader. They're like, oh, we need another black leader. We need another Martin Luther King. You don't need a leader. You're your own leader. And so if you manage your house and you manage daily stuff, you are your own leader. And so those people who have been put in place or put themselves in place as leaders are really brainwashing people and taking advantage of them and not leading them in the right sense. And it's pure education that's needed.
And I think it's also the Willie Lynch.
The Willie Lynch. And like I said, crabs in the bottom of the barrel.
Well, but then we talk about crabs in the bottom of the barrel. But then who built the barrel and put the crabs in it?
Exactly.
Because crabs are going to act like crabs, right? And actually, crabs, when they're in the barrel, they actually form, the real crabs actually form a chain, and then so they start letting each other out.
Right, they really work together. They only snap at you. When you put your hands in it.
That part. Yeah. And then the other thing is that, you know, but we had that.
We did have that.
We had that.
We had it during civil rights. We had it during slavery. We had it. And then all of a sudden.
But that middle, and it wasn't all of a sudden. Like the middle clip that we had that says by design.
By design.
By design.
It is by design.
So if people are doing well, you need to recognize who helped you in those conditions because we didn't do it by ourselves. There were ancestors.
Right.
And there were people before them that had the courage and were willing to sacrifice for the whole, for the group.
Exactly.
There are people that, you know, the media puts in front of us, you know, the kumbaya, hands up, don't shoot, we shall overcome. Mm-hmm. But there were also the deacons of defense that the civil rights leaders would stay after they did the prayer meetings, the nonviolent, who had the shotguns, who dared.
We don't have that anymore.
Well, by design.
Right.
Because the first, you know, the first black FBI agent was recruited to take down civil rights.
They were.
And take down Marcus Garvey.
Right.
So so it's by design.
Right.
You know, Black Wall Street.
Right.
That's the only time that, that's not the first time, the only time, but this is the first time that the American government actually used bombs.
Right.
On their only citizenry.
Right.
So we've got about a minute or so. Let's talk about a couple of things that are happening. June 22nd, really quickly.
So June 22nd, we wanted to give people visual aids and and make sure that they, instead of spending Juneteenth in a parade that doesn't represent us with the Pan-African flags. Our flag is the Black Heritage flag, black, red, and green.
And gold. Give me a number for more information.
I don't know the number by heart, but you can always call me Antonia Edwards. My number is 757-589-6239. My email address is my name, antonia.edwards. You can call me for any of the information that we have here.
And thank you so much for being here.
No problem.
Here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. I want to leave you with some words from a prophet. 50 Cent, you're not making money until you're making money when you're not working.
Right.
Take care of yourself and each other.
Thank
God bless.
Thank you. Thank you.
We are the writers and not the generation of fighters. When it gets hard, we charge.
Don't get it twisted. Black women insisted. Show the world how they resisted. Alabama got rocked. The world was shocked that they did it. 98% got whipped. In the face of an onslaught, 600,000 got caught. The tables were turned and burned. The haters got just what they earned. Sooner or later, they will learn. They'll learn.
Watch your wrist. Put your fist. Throw your hands in the air just like this.
The preceding commentary does not necessarily reflect the views of the staff and management of WBCA or the Boston Neighborhood Network. If you would like to express another opinion, you can address your comments to Boston Neighborhood Network, 3025 Washington Street, Boston, Massachusetts, 02119. To arrange a time for your own commentary, you can call WBCA at 617-708-3215 or email radio@bnnmedia.org.